Hello and welcome back to Fertility Matters with me, Jessica Hobbis. This is the show where we talk about all things related to the health space and have a range of experts from the field in. Hope you enjoy. Hello everyone and welcome back to the show. Today with us, we're really lucky to have Remy with us. And Remy is an obs and gynae registrar in London. She graduated from King's College London Medical School and is achieving Masters in Reproductive Science and Women's Health from UCL. She has a real passion for impacting women's health beyond the hospital walls though, and which has led to her active involvement in health education and femtech, including being the co-founder of Chat Her Box, which we're going to speak about later. But this is a women's health initiative which aims to really empower women, and that's actually where we're going to focus the discussion today, around how ethnic minorities and women from lower socioeconomic status can, how they really access and interact with their health and the healthcare system. And I think it's such an important topic of conversation, particularly in the current climate. So I think firstly, yeah, it's really great to have you on the show and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me and asking me on. Yeah.
Really no, thank enjoyable. You. And yeah, I'd love to know, as I always start these, how you kind of got into health and women's health in general and what kind of led you on your journey.
Yeah, so I think, so I always say when I started med school that I pretty much was almost 100% sure that I was going to do women's health, because I don't know, I just find it really fascinating that, you know, we make up 51% of the population and, you know, all we get is sort of one specialty in medicine. But it's really a specialty that interacts with women from sort of cradle to grave. Like, you know, women go through their first period, they get menstrual problems, they get pregnant, and, you know, things that happen beyond in the menopause. So it's always something I've really found interesting. And then sort of through med school, getting into like clinical work, it sort of became glaringly obvious to me working in North and Central East, well, North Central and East London, that, you know, being in London where it's very ethnically diverse and also socioeconomically diverse as well, you know, you could be in, say, Newham Hospital and about 70% of the population have an ethnic minority background. Mm. You could go 20 minutes into central London and the reverse would be true. And just how seeing how different groups of women interact with their health, what outcomes they have, how they interact with healthcare professionals, and feeling like there was a gap in not necessarily health knowledge, but a gap in outcomes, which is well published, but also a gap in how they interact, what their community tells them, and sort of the mistrust around sort of the general medical system in, you know, in the UK. So yeah, so for that, I was like, I'm from an ethnic minority background myself. How can I leverage the knowledge I have and the affinity to the community that I'm passionate about and try and improve their health outcomes by educating them, which is only a really tiny slice of the pie, but also empowering them to commit to educating their own community. Mm. So yeah, that's really how I came here. And it was early 2020. A friend of mine had a very similar passion, but more from a general medical approach and not just women's health. And she asked me to come and speak at an event. And I was like, oh, it's like 9 till 5 on a Saturday. I had a daughter at the time and I felt really much like, why am I giving up my whole day? But by the end of it, I was so energized. I was so like passionate about speaking to people and just interacting with people in the general public that you would never really see in your clinic setting, or you wouldn't really have enough time to answer their questions or to or to challenge some of their beliefs. And that's kind of what led me on the path to co-founding Chatterbox.
No, that's amazing. And yeah, I love to kind of delve into some of the work that you guys are doing. But I kind of just had a question where you kind of mentioned the education part, but how do you really work in Chatterbox to create that empowering and community kind of feel whereby people feel safe to speak about stuff, particularly like intimate concerns or other kind of concerns that I know a lot of time people are too afraid to kind of speak about? How do you kind of foster that environment?
Yeah, so I think it's really interesting. So I find, maybe because again, I'll go into most rooms with the title of doctor, but I find women are really open and really willing to share things that would be considered intimate information. And so I'm someone that goes to church. And within my church, we've had like lots of health seminars for women. And I'd be working very closely with the leadership to make sure that we're delivering workshop, delivering webinars. And in a setting where you're like, oh, people are going to be quite conservative, they're not going to want to discuss really open issues. You'd have a room of 30 women, and one woman would be talking about her sex life, and one woman would be talking about how her HRT isn't working and what else can she do. And another one would be talking about bladder issues and things like that. So that's a way in which Chatterbox has worked in going out into community events. I remember we were at an event where it was like a hair conference, and they had a one breakout session on women's health, and you had women really standing up, being really open and vulnerable about their own experiences and just bending that to the general conversation. So that's kind of how we work in practice. And obviously we also do online webinars again, where we always just make sure that we leave enough time for women to really air their concerns and make sure that they've left the session with their questions answered as much as possible.
That's really interesting, actually. I think that kind of whereby you leverage other already established communities where people feel safe, and then you can kind of come in and incorporate that into your own and to get across the message that you guys and the messages that you guys are trying to speak about. I think that's actually a really interesting way of approaching the issues at hand as well. And then, yeah, I'd love to know a bit more about Chatterbox with regards to like how long you've run it, what the aim is, what you guys are trying to do with everything.
So Chatterbox was founded by myself and my really good friend Jennifer. So we are friends like from the first week at med school. We live together, we're in the same specialty, we've worked in the same hospitals. And again, she's Black British as well. And it was just born out of ongoing conversations about, oh, I had a patient like this, and this is what happened. I got really frustrated. I don't think she got the care she deserved. And how can we do something about it? So early 2020, we were like, look, let's be intentional. And we started really by creating an online platform on Instagram and creating content where we would break down certain conditions, how we felt it affected Black women specifically, and just share the information. And because again, soon after that COVID happened, everyone was on their phones, everyone was at home, everyone wanted to consume health content because of really of COVID-19. So the page grew, we got to about 3,500 followers, and it was just us again around our day job, around the whole pandemic, just churning out educational content that we'd post primarily on our Instagram, and then creating webinars and online workshops where women could really delve into certain topics more. And then as soon as sort of work, well, as soon as the pandemic was over, both of us ended up going through exams and got really busy with life. So if you look on our page, we probably haven't posted in about 18 months, but we have been doing work outside, so speaking in communities, going out into community events. And our aim with Chatterbox really is what we say on our tin, which is to educate women, to engage with women. So, because it's a two-way street, I've got as much to learn about what I can do to impact women's health within the system, as well as trying to get them to play with how the system is currently set up and hopefully empower them. Because I believe the reason why we go out into already established community events is that women need to be reached where they're at. Like, Public Health England will produce a bit of information or a poster. And I will be like, I never heard of it in my own social settings, that I don't know how women who only go to the hairdressers, only mix within their own community, don't speak language, they're not getting access to that information. So it's really, how can we take that information to where they're at, be it in their place of worship, be it in their place of school, be it in their own community events, and also not limiting it just to Black women, but leveraging, doctors are very diverse, leveraging other types of doctors or doctors from other ethnic minority background, and leveraging them to go and take that information into their communities as well. So at the moment we're going through a bit of a rebrand with a plan to relaunch and to just really focus on meeting women in their community spaces, but also in their corporate spaces as well. Like, lots of women are at work, Most corporations can spare an hour at some point for women to feel empowered about their health. And not just the women, the men as well. Men need to be educated. It's a problem for everybody. So that's kind of where we see the next phase going.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Stop suffering with pet-related allergies when near dogs and cats. Great news, you can feel safe around pets with NasalGuard for pet lovers. NasalGuard topical gel blocks pet dander, hair, and dust mites from entering your nasal passages. Try NasalGuard for pet lovers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about NasalGuard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Aunt and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Well, that's amazing and so exciting as well, especially with regards to the rebrand. And what kind of other things are you changing about with the rebrand?
So we're probably going to check. We're going to change our name because we just think that we need to go into a new space, and it's going to be called Neara, so Neara Health. And that in both our languages, because both our parents speak different languages, would be her body or her health. And we just feel that that speaks a bit more to where we want to go, to make it more of a company, but like a non-profit, which is actively targeting women just beyond social media. And that's one of the things that we felt as well with Instagram is you're speaking to people who are from ethnic and minority backgrounds, but actually they've got phones, they can afford data because they're on Instagram. And actually by speaking to that group, you're probably missing out on another group of women. So we really want to cover all bases and really try and serve the community that we're seeing in the hospital. Also accepting that we only see we don't see all women when you're in a hospital setting. You only see the women that self-present. You don't see the women who are scared to go to the doctors. You don't see the women who don't engage with care. Yeah. And those women need to be reached somehow.
Completely. And also when you're in the hospital, it's not necessarily a place where people feel comfortable.
Exactly.
And when that's why I think what you guys are doing is so good, in that you're going into these spaces where women feel comfortable and able to speak about, as you mentioned, their HRT or their sex life or whatever's going on. And I think that then gives you a really good inroads to kind of speak about and educate them on things that perhaps like they could do better, even if it's small changes. So I think
exactly.
That's really, really important. And yeah, that's really exciting to get involved in as well, and tiring as well to do alongside your job. I really commend you for that. That's really impressive. And I know because you obviously, I know it's not necessarily just restricted to, but focus on Black women's experience and how they present different signs and symptoms of different conditions differently. I guess I'd just love to know, perhaps for people listening as well, who may be slightly curious as to what are some examples maybe, or what are some common questions that maybe you answer a lot in the work that you do?
Yeah. So I think when we think about, say, when we think about women, when we think about all women, we all know that primarily we all have the same body parts, right? And what we're beginning to understand is that race is a social construct and actually doesn't have that much biological differences. But where the main differences are probably coming from are like cultural changes, like cultural differences, differences in diet, differences in certain practices, and how that's like translated over the years. So for Black women in particular, we know that Black women are experiencing fibroids at a higher rate than white women or Asian women. And actually, when they do have fibroids, it can be quite debilitating. So they get the heavy bleeding, they get the pressure symptoms, they're needing to go to the toilet all the time, and its effect on their fertility. And again, in the fertility space, you see that women from ethnic minority backgrounds, so Black women and Asian women, are sort of less likely to present with fertility problems, or they're more likely to try at home for a lot longer before they go to their GP, before they get their investigations. Mm. And therefore, a lot of them are becoming sort of childless, not necessarily by choice, but because of access. Mm. Also, the cost that's associated with fertility treatment in the UK means that actually, if you're from a certain socioeconomic class, that you're not actually going to be able to afford to pay for IVF, and therefore you won't be able to go through and have like accurate fertility treatment. So a lot of the questions that we tend to get from women will be, oh, I've gone to my doctor about this and they've said, you know, let's see if I can think of an example. Oh, so I've gone to my doctor, I've been trying to conceive, not getting pregnant, and my doctor said I'm not entitled to have blood tests yet, I need to wait a year. And we'll be like, well, actually, no, the guideline is that you're probably not entitled for treatment after two, until you've tried for 2 years, but actually you can be investigated after the first year. You can be referred, because if, you know, you're found to have PCOS or you're found to have fibroids, mm-hmm. you could have treatment that means that by the 2 years, when you're going through IVF, you're already a further step along, if that makes sense. And we often get things like, oh, I've got fibroids, what can I do that's not medical that can treat them or manage my heavy periods or manage my hormones?
Yeah.
So we often get a variety of questions, and a lot of women want to know what they can do to make a change to their health that doesn't involve going to a doctor or engaging with the hospital. And that's where a lot of our questions come from. But really, for me anyway, it's always just about having a dialogue. Answering the questions, but also asking my own questions. You know, if I come across a group of women and I'm like, how many of you have had a smear test? And half of them might say, oh, those things hurt, or this and that and that. And you're like, well, actually, you know why you need to have it? And are you putting yourself at risk of cervical cancer and things like that? So yeah, I always think it's a two-way street. Like, I'm always willing to understand where women are coming from, just as much as I'm here to tell them where, you know, the knowledge I have and the knowledge I've gained through sort of clinical practice.
Yeah, I think that's such a, like, a really good way to look at it and have that two-way dialogue with it as well, and really just try and empower people about their own body so that they can make the right decisions for themselves. Because it's not it's not us saying you have to do this, or it's not someone like yourself who's a doctor saying you have to do this, blah de blah de blah. It's saying this is what's out there, this is the knowledge, and you can now make what you think's the decisions that you think that are right for you and what work for you. So I think that's definitely something that I think healthcare needs to move more towards as well. So I think that it's nice that you're kind of helping it along the way and doing that with your organization, which is great. And yeah, I'd love to know a little bit more about your plans to grow and how you can kind of expand this education beyond what it's at the moment.
Yeah, so I think, like, when you said earlier that, oh, it must be hard doing it alongside like a full-time job, like 100%. And I think that's probably the one thing that's stopped both of us really from pushing Yeah, not stopped us from pushing, but it's probably our major hindrance. Like, how can we grow it? And like with anything, you need money. So we did have funding, sort of around the time of the pandemic. But you know, even to apply for funds, it takes time.
Yeah, completely.
And then probably just have more people. So I think when we did have funds, we were paying other doctors to run our workshops because, again, as much as people. As much as I like to talk, I don't have all the answers. And I know that I've got so many colleagues who are smarter than me, more specific about their subject areas, who can really be of use and really impactful. And I think we just want to grow that more and not just focus on Black women, but to focus on other ethnic minorities as well. Because I know for a fact, if I go into a space where there are Black British of West African descent or any sort of sub-Saharan African, they're more likely to have affinity with me, but I can't go into a room where there are South Asians and expect the same affinity. And actually, they're probably going to respond better to doctors who look like them, who can speak their cultural language, who can, who can understand the importance of why they need to bleed every month. So, I will see patients in clinic, and I say, "Oh, you've got heavy periods. You're anemic. Why don't you just go on the Mirena coil?" And they're like, "Oh, okay, fine. Tell me more." And then I say, "Oh, in about a third of women, they won't have a period." And they're like, "No. I need to have a period every month." And I'm like, "Oh, no, you don't. Trust me, you don't." And they're like, "No, I do." And whatever I say means nothing to them because I don't understand why they feel the need to have a period every month or what that means for them culturally. But my colleague who was South Asian would get that and would be like, "Well, let's try this or let's try this option." And not to say I'm not giving them those options, but there's a language. I don't know.
It's
There's
the
an
unsaid,
affinity
it's
that
the
they don't
unsaid
have.
understanding, I think.
Exactly. And so I think that's where we need to grow. So like just to grow in the offering that we can give, and to just put on more events, go into more spaces, and speak and just really deliver what it is we want. And like I said, money, you need money to do these things often. And there just has to be an understanding that, if we go into, say, a corporate space, whatever funding we get is so that we can then deliver free events for women who aren't, in a position to pay, shouldn't have to pay really. And that's pretty much our next step. And so
Oh,
we're
that's
very slowly planning and launching, and hopefully this quarter we'll be up with
And
our
yeah, I was
new.
going to say, what's the timeline? Do you have like a set timeline? I know it's obviously hard to put a specific date on these things, but do you have like a timeline for people to look out for or to,
So I'd
aware
say
of?
the first quarter of this year, we'd be up and running with our new name, with some new events as well. And also just like having new content. And I think I was at a talk recently and they were like, "Oh, since the pandemic, all we've done is talk about women's health, and women are anxious and women are scared." And that for me is because we're not having a two-way conversation, right? So I do believe that having a two-way conversation will help alleviate fears, but also empower women to take the information back into their communities, because you can only touch so many people. And what you rely on is for people to carry the message on and carry the message on. The NHS is changing as doctors. We're striking, we're stressed, we're overwhelmed. And again, it's just giving people new tips or new tools on how to navigate the system that we currently have, because it's very different to what we had 3 years ago.
The station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world, and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Completely. I think it's people, unless you're part of the system and in the system, it's hard to know the exact route and what everything entails. Even as you were saying before about the smear test, for example, people just, there's a lot of misinformation or stigma around particular things, and people hear something from a friend of a friend of a friend of a horror story. Everyone has a horror story, particularly in women's health.
Yeah.
And then that somehow gets ballooned into something else, and the people are too scared to then do it. So I think that's definitely the right ways to kind of access the communities and provide that information sharing, and also to understand the communities better themselves from your side of things, that two-way side of things. You know what people need and what they're actually looking for as well. But that's all so exciting. I guess it must be a bit daunting but exciting, I imagine.
Yes. Definitely both daunting and excited. And often when you say something, you then have to commit, right? So even me saying, oh, by Q1, we'll be up and running means that actually by Q1, we have to be up and running.
That's quite good, though. I always find that myself, where if you speak something into existence, if you say it enough times and you've got to do it by then, it kind of forces your hand, which is always good. But that's amazing.
No, I was going to say, and it's just something that I'm genuinely passionate about. Like, obviously, I like going into work and I like my clinical job.
Yeah.
But I genuinely believe that health needs to be impacted beyond the hospital walls. Mm-hmm. By the time I see women, I'm often seeing them too late. And because it is such a passion project, that's why, like, I persist. And I'm like, actually, this needs to be done. And, you know, even, like, in the UK, often women don't ever see a gynecologist. Sorry, I'm like going off on a tangent. Whereas I'll often see women, like European women, who'll be like, oh, I see my gynecologist every year just for a checkup or just for this. I'm like, oh, that's excessive. But actually, it's probably not. You know, you need to see them early. You need to be able to do more preventative things, because, you know, women are not, you know, women are having issues, which means they're not going into work. They're losing out on finances. They can't do jobs like everybody else, but also the workforce are losing out because women are called in sick once or twice every month. And you know, it's just, something needs to change.
I couldn't agree more. I think it's, I couldn't agree more. I could go on about it all day, where we should be moving towards that preventative care model, where the hospital really should be that last resort. It shouldn't be that, oh, I've been putting up with these symptoms or putting up with this really uncomfortable thing that's going on, of feeling all this pain for such a long time, and now it's got to an unbearable level and I'm going to come into the hospital and maybe ask for something. But I think it's all about that kind of holistic preventative care model, whereby actually that symptom is kind of nipped in the bud, or you're not even feeling that symptom in the first place, or you kind of know what might be causing it or things like that. And I think it's that whole, Yeah, preventative care model that I couldn't agree more with. It's, yeah, the checking in on oneself is so important. I think
sure.
a lot of the time we kind of, we're so busy, busy, busy. I mean, yeah, I mean, you're even saying you're doing this alongside your actual job, but it's like you'll keep busy, 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 and then you kind of overbear yourself and ignore any symptoms perhaps. But I think it's a time, and COVID, I guess, kind of changed that a little bit more, where people directed their thought process a bit more to, okay, actually, am I as healthy as I can be? Or am I doing what's actually best for my body? Or am I just running myself down and burning myself out?
Yeah, for sure.
So no, I think that's why that's so important as well. And yeah, completely agreed. But I think that also brings me to the end of my questions, but I just didn't know if you had anything else that you wanted to say at all, or anything else that you wanted to mention. I'll obviously tag all your socials so people can go check out your website and check out the rebrand as well when that's launched in Q1.
In Q1, yeah. So, yeah, no real questions. No, I think I'm just, yeah, obviously, thank you for speaking to me. And I think also your company is like part of the solution, isn't it?
Mm. And
that's really important. And I think it's, the world is changing. Tech is more global. Digital yeah. health, women are more global. Mm. And healthcare needs to change with that. And yeah.
Yeah, we've got so much tech and so many innovation, so much innovation is going on. And it's just about utilizing that, and also, as what you're doing is allowing people to access the information to know to utilize that, or to know exactly. what options there are. It's not yeah. saying you have to choose this option. It's saying exactly. these are the options, and should you wish to take those options, you can take them. I think that's what's really important, and
yeah.
as opposed to not giving any option at all.
Yeah. And also just understanding that a lot of what we have is within our own, like digital health and tech is making it that women have more ownership of their mm-hmm. data over what they choose to investigate and what they don't. And they're not relying on a GP. They're not relying on a speculum even, and just getting more information. I think it's really important, but yeah.
Yeah, no.
Thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you very much for coming on. That was amazing and so interesting. And I know, yeah, the community is going to love to hear it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now that brings us to the end of the show for this week. I hope you enjoyed listening to Fertility Matters with me, Jessica Hobbis from ScreenMe, and really looking forward to hearing from you guys next week.